From national news in D.C. to behind-the-scenes coverage of the Nebraska Capitol, this is your Capitol Connection. And now, bringing the Capitol to you, here's your host, Nate Gross.
The Nebraska legislature has officially reached the halfway point of the 2017 legislative session, and what an interesting year it's been. Welcome to Capitol Connection. Joining me in just a few moments to talk about what we've seen this year in Nebraska with our state legislature is someone who knows about it better than most and gets a front row view every day, Lieutenant Governor of Nebraska and President of the Nebraska Legislature, Mike Foley, will be with me shortly. We'll hear from him. It's been a fascinating year, and we've seen some very interesting things from our state legislature. When you consider we have 17 new state senators, two-thirds of the body have 2 years of experience or less. We had a substantially prolonged rules debate, and the legislature continues to take on big issues. And this continued last week when lawmakers considered a bill from Senator Ernie Chambers to eliminate mandatory minimum sentences for all Class 1C and 1D felonies. And what ended up happening was the legislature passed an amended version of this bill so it only relates to drug offenses. So this bill has passed through the first round 25-22. And the amended bill is substantially different from the original bill, which would have included any crime that was a Class 1C or 1D felony, and that includes things such as assault with a deadly weapon, assault on a police officer, gun crimes, hate crimes. And this bill from Senator Chambers just would have done away with all mandatory minimum sentences. So this was a very interesting and I would consider a dangerous bill. I think that sends the wrong message. So the bill was amended to include only drug offenses. However, under this amended bill, that still includes things like heroin, cocaine, and methamphetamine. Even if it's sold to minors or near school property, they will no longer have a mandatory minimum sentence of 3 to 5 years. And the governor, both the governor and the attorney general, have opposed this bill. Governor Ricketts said removing mandatory minimums, even for drug felons, would soften Nebraska's prosecutions for public safety. I urge the legislature to reconsider its decision to advance this bill. And I'm sure they will when they revisit this on second and third round. This is an issue that's proved controversial and kind of divided the body, but it just squeaked by, got the minimum number of votes necessary, 25. Another bill that also passed this last week was LB 407, which creates a task force on White Clay. White Clay, Nebraska, and the surrounding area of Pine Ridge has just been plagued with alcohol addiction. They have alcoholism rates as much as 80%, and really tragically, one in four children are born with fetal alcohol syndrome. So this is a bill to create a task force to study and analyze and make recommendations in a report on what can be done to improve and fix the severe economic and social problems that are happening up on White Clay. So that bill passed first round 42-0. And the legislature is going to pick back up debating a bill from Senator Lowe of Kearney, which repeals Nebraska's biker helmet law. Currently, if you ride a motorcycle in Nebraska, you have to wear a helmet. The bill being considered would take that away. If you are over 21, you would no longer be required to wear a helmet as long as you still had eye protection. And that's been an issue that we've seen every year. It's back again, so we'll see what this new body, the path that they decide to go, and that'll be interesting to see because it'll kind of tell you a lot of senators what their political philosophy or ideology is just based on whether or not they think you should be required to wear a helmet when you ride a bike. So if you're a biker, you'll want to pay attention next week and see what happens with LB 368, which would repeal Nebraska's biker helmet law. There is simply no shortage of issues to debate this year. It's been an extremely interesting year, and it's important that people remain engaged and know what's going on. So I'm thankful to have today the Lieutenant Governor of Nebraska, Mike Foley, who we're going to have a discussion with about the legislature and some other things going on in our state. But first, I do want to take the time to thank the sponsors of the show. The Bill Black CBS Home Real Estate Team. Call 402-680-2500 for all your real estate needs. Whether you are buying, selling, dreaming of building your next house, or looking to invest in real estate, the Bill Black Team is here to help. Let the Bill Black CBS Home Real Estate team put their strategic marketing plan, extraordinary track record, and team of dedicated real estate pros to work for you. Whatever your real estate needs are, call the Bill Black CBS Home Real Estate team, who will go above and beyond for you. Whether you are buying, selling, building, or looking to invest in real estate, call the Bill Black team at 402-680-2500 and let them put their expertise to work for you today. And whatever your vehicle needs, visit Walker Tire in Omaha at one of their four convenient locations at 144th and Harrison, 84th and Dodge, 89th and L, and 140th and Center. Walker Tire and Auto Service has been serving Omaha customers for over six decades. When you visit Walker Tire and Auto, be sure to take advantage of the Walker Tire Advantage, where you get free oil changes and more for the life of your tires. Plus, only at Walker Tire and Auto can you get the free video vehicle health inspection, where one of their expert technicians will walk around your vehicle while filming, telling you everything they're seeing about your car, and then let you watch it for free right from your phone or email. So visit Walker Tire in Omaha at one of their four convenient locations and get the Walker Tire Advantage. Joining me now is a special guest and someone I am honored to have on the show today, Lieutenant Governor of Nebraska, Mike Foley. Lieutenant Governor, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Nick. Good morning. Great to be with you.
Well, I'm always trying to get breaking news on my show, and something that not a lot of people know is that the Lieutenant Governor is actually also the Director of Homeland Security for the state, and as Director of Homeland Security, you are also in charge of the Great Navy of the state of Nebraska,
yes,
which resides
right.
in a secret location. So I was hoping you could finally reveal the secret
location
of the Navy.
Well, I have to apologize, Nate. I'm just not at liberty to disclose the location of the Great Navy of Nebraska.
Fair enough.
I assure you, it is impressive.
Well, we're sure it is. Maybe on the banks of the Platte River somewhere, but I had to ask. On a more serious note, though, one unique role that you do serve in as Lieutenant Governor is also as the President of the Legislature.
Yes.
So what is that like, being a member of the executive branch, but also working so closely with the state legislature?
Well, it's kind of a fascinating experience. As you know, Nate, I was in the legislature some years ago, 2001 through 2007, and had the experience as a state senator to be engaged in the process of writing the laws for the state of Nebraska. But term limits had just kind of kicked in. It hadn't removed some of the old-timers yet. And although I was in the legislature for 6 years, I never had the opportunity to preside over the legislature because kind of the older, more experienced senators got to do that, and it didn't get passed down to some of us younger guys. But anyway, now in my new role as Lieutenant Governor, I do have the responsibility of being the presiding officer of the legislature. Of course, I can't do it all the time. And when I'm not there, the law says that it reverts to the Speaker of the legislature, and then he in turn, if he's not available, it would go to any of the other senators that he would assign it to. But it's a fascinating experience to be in the room where the laws are being written and observing it and participating in it in a way, because there are rulings that you make as a presiding officer. And so you're a little bit part of the process. You're not actually voting unless there's a tie vote. And actually, in all the years I've been in the Capitol, I've never seen a tie vote in the legislature. But if that may happen someday. It has happened in history. And it may happen again someday, and I would actually have to cast a vote. But in any event, just being in the room, presiding over the whole process, coordinating the votes and the amendments and so forth, calling on the speakers, keeping track of their time, and implementing the rules of the legislature gives you a bird's-eye view of how laws are being written. And you can see who's talking to who, who's kind of mad at somebody else, or who's working a deal with somebody else. And it's a fascinating experience. I love doing it.
Right. It is a fascinating process. And you mentioned that you're a former state senator, so you know the process well. What have you seen this year from the legislature that looks different than years past? I think it's fair to say it's been a pretty interesting, somewhat unprecedented year that we've seen.
It's been an extraordinary year. For one thing, the Republican Party came in with great strength in this current legislature. And they exhibited their strength on day one of the process when they elected the committee chairman and the speaker. And with the exception of the Urban Affairs Committee, the Republican members of the legislature pretty much captured all the leadership positions. And I've never seen that before. Usually there's a split between the Democrats and Republicans, and typically a Republican speaker, but the committee chairs are often divided between Democrats and Republicans. And I know that's been a sore spot for some Republicans. And they've encouraged the Republican members to exert more authority, more leadership, and so forth, and they did on day one of the session. That what happened on day one seems to have kind of rippled through the ensuing weeks, with still some hard feelings, I think, over how those committee chairmen were selected. But it is what it is, and we have out of 14 standing committees, 13 of them are headed by Republicans. There's one Democrat, and we have a Republican speaker. Now, beyond that, the other thing that the legislature typically does within the first 2 or 3 days of the session is to write the rules of how the session will be governed. And they start with last year's legislative rules, and then they make certain amendments, so usually nothing very noteworthy, and then they adopt what they call permanent rules and then proceed on for the rest of the 90-day long session. Now we're on day, 46, 47, something like that, and we're still operating under the temporary rules, in other words, last year's rules, because there's been a great squabble over how to revise the rules associated with a filibuster. If one single senator or maybe a handful of senators really, really don't like a bill, they can tie the place up in knots through a filibuster process by filing an unlimited number of amendments and motions and so forth, and just dragging out the process as long as they can possibly make it. And the only way to break through that is what's called a motion of cloture. And that requires 33 votes out of 49 members. And bear in mind, on any given day of 49 members, two or three probably will be absent or at meetings or ill or wherever. So you're really looking for 33 votes out of maybe 46. So it's a pretty high percentage, and it's difficult to win a motion of cloture. And many, many senators over all the years that I've been in the legislature or observing it in various capacities in government, there's been a concern that that rule of 33 is just too high of a mark, and that we ought to lower it maybe to 30 votes or some other voting arrangement, so that we don't empower one senator or just a small handful of senators who don't like a bill. So they've been having extended discussions over the rules, that particular rule, for many weeks. They took a pause a couple of weeks ago and said, let's just put this off for a while, get back to legislative business, and on day 50, which is just around the corner, we'll come back to the rules discussion and see where we are, if we've had more experience with actually using the rules and implementing the rules. So we'll see where we are on day 50 when we come back to this rules discussion, but that's where it will be. We'll be on this whole question of filibuster and the motion of cloture. What's interesting about this legislature, and I don't think we've ever had this situation before, is that two-thirds of our legislature, two out of every three state senators, have 2 years of experience or less. This is a very, very young legislature. Now, they have great life experiences. They're wonderful men and women. But in terms of their legislative experience, it's very, very thin. And I think that's part of this discussion as well, is the lack of experience of so many state senators. And some of the more senior senators are saying, just give it some time, use the rules for a while, get familiar with them, and then we can have a more intelligent discussion about how to revise those rules. But it's been a very, very interesting session. I've never seen anything quite like this. Now, of course, on top of all that, we have our budget problems. The farm economy in Nebraska is really hurting right now. The overall total farm income just a few years ago was at $7.5 billion. Now it's down to about $4.5 billion. So when you take $3 billion of income out of the pockets of our farmers and ranchers, naturally that will ripple throughout the entire economy of Nebraska. So when the farmers and ranchers aren't making as much money as they used to, obviously they don't have to pay as much in taxes, and the tax revenue is just not coming in the way that it had been projected previously. So the budget currently is not in balance, and the legislature is working very diligently to make necessary revisions to the budget, to cut some state agencies' budgets down, and get the budget back into balance, and then go about the task of writing the new state budget. And that's going to be the dominant issue, I think, for the rest of the session. But it's not the only issue. There are other very important issues. I'm sure we'll get to those in a moment. Issues that your listeners, I think, will be deeply concerned about.
Absolutely. Well, it's certainly been an interesting year. And as you mentioned, we're reaching the halfway point through the legislative session. And you've mentioned the farming economy. But now, what are the priorities for the governor and your office as we go through the last half of the legislative session?
Well, one of the things that the governor's proposed is, first of all,
first and foremost, really, get the budget back into balance. And that's going to be take some heavy lifting by all the senators, in particular the Appropriations Committee. Looking beyond the budget, the governor said everywhere that he travels and everywhere that I travel, I can assure you, and we go to every nook and cranny of Nebraska. We love doing it. It's a great privilege to meet the people of Nebraska. But everywhere we go, the same message comes back to us from the people loud and clear, and that is fix the property tax system. Nebraska notoriously has a very, very high property tax burden. People who move here from other states are just stunned at how high their property taxes are. And in particular, given this, the nature of our farm economy right now, it's really hurtful to our agricultural and our ranching interests. And they, among all, are speaking out loudest and most boldly about the need to revise the property tax system. So the governor's proposed, based on a recommendation from many, many farmers and ranchers, is to completely scrap the entire system of how we value agricultural lands. Historically, the way that we've done it in Nebraska is we look at what's called the sales comparison approach. If the farmer to the east of you sells for a certain amount of money and the farmer to the west of you sells for a certain amount of money, even though you're not selling, you're in the middle, we can kind of figure out what your land is probably worth based on what other farmers in the region have been able to get in the market for their sales. Well, there are often peculiar reasons why a particular farm will sell high or a ranch will sell high, and it might drive up the value of your land even though you're really not even making a fair living on that land to now. So the governor's proposed that we go to what's called an income potential approach to ag land valuations. We look at the type of land you have, the quality of the land, whether or not it's irrigated land or dry land, and then make a calculation as to what you could reasonably hope to earn as a farmer on that land. And then we value your land accordingly, and then you pay property taxes based on this income potential approach. Many of the major agricultural powerhouse states in the United States, so Ohio, Illinois, Wisconsin, and so forth, that look a lot like Nebraska in terms of their agricultural strengths, don't use the sales comparison approach. They use this income potential approach. And if it's good enough for them, we think it might be a good idea for Nebraska as well. So that's a very key bill. The governor's working with the chair of our agricultural committee, Senator Lydia Brosh, on legislation that would move us in that direction. It wouldn't kick in right away. I don't think it kicks into like 2019, and then it's kind of phased in over time. The other big bill that the governor keenly is interested in is legislation to lower the top bracket in our personal income taxes. Nebraska's top bracket is 6.84%. And you don't have to be a millionaire to get into that top bracket. Anybody making over $29,000 a year is in the top bracket. And remember, we're competing head-to-head with states like South Dakota or Wyoming, trying to lure people and lure businesses to come to Nebraska to live the good life. But what's the top bracket in the income tax tables for states like Wyoming and South Dakota? Well, it's zero. They don't have an income tax. So when you're competing against states that have a zero income tax, you're really at a disadvantage. And the governor knows this, and we all know it. And we've got to lower this our top bracket in the personal income tax, which, incidentally, many businesses, smaller businesses, file under the personal income tax rate. So it's affecting small businesses as well as all of us individuals. So the governor said, look, starting in the year 2020, we can't do it right now because of the budget crunch, but starting in the year 20, over the ensuing 8 years, let's lower that top bracket just a little bit each year for 8 years. Now, if we get into another recession where the income is just not coming into the state, then in those years, we will not get the tax cut. But in every other year, when the revenue rebounds, as it most surely will, in all those years, we'll lower that top bracket just a little bit so that we can get our top bracket down below 6%. That will make Nebraska more competitive with many, many other states and will help us to bring jobs and prosperity back to Nebraska.
Well, we hear about the tax burden issue a lot, and we've got to get that issue fixed. So we're fortunate to have a governor and lieutenant governor so dedicated to addressing that issue. And you've served the state of Nebraska honorably for years, state senator, state auditor, now as lieutenant governor. What is it about our state and the people here that keep you so motivated and dedicated to serving in public office?
Well, that's a great question. You know, and as I mentioned earlier, I get to travel all across the state. I've been to so many communities in virtually every county of Nebraska. And it's an extraordinary experience to meet the people in Nebraska. They are so just genuinely good, humble, hardworking people. They're not looking for a lot from government. They just want to live their lives, attend their churches, raise their children, and enjoy the good life of Nebraska. And they want to be left alone by government. And they want government, to the extent that government does provide services, they want us to do it very efficiently in a very cost-effective manner at the lowest possible tax burden. That's a very reasonable expectation, and we should live up to that expectation. But they're just wonderful people, just genuine, no pretenses, humble people who work very hard.
Absolutely. And Lieutenant Governor, I know you to be a strong man of faith and that's an important and central role in your life. How has your faith impacted your desire to be engaged politically?
Well, I think, as you mentioned, I do take my faith very, very seriously. And I think as Christians, we're called to use whatever skills and talents God may bless us with, to use those to help our fellow men and women. And I see myself being able to do that through the political process, either as a state senator or auditor or now as lieutenant governor. It's given me a lot of different ways of serving the people, and it's a great joy to be able to do that.
Well, that's a message I think all of us, especially as believers, need to hear. And one issue I know you are especially passionate about and have truly been an incredible advocate and champion for is the sanctity of life. Why is the life issue so important?
Well, simply put, Nate, if we don't get this one right, nothing else really matters. We have to protect human life at all stages of development, and we have some opportunities to do that, despite the fact that the U.S. Supreme Court 40-some years ago promulgated the Roe versus Wade decision. There are still opportunities where we can speak up through our laws in defense of unborn children. One of those opportunities this year, in fact, is a bill that we're working on very closely with the Nebraska Family Alliance and other pro-life groups. It's LB 46. And this bill would create a new license plate, an optional license plate that people could get for an extra $5. And about 29 or so other states have this option. Nebraska currently does not, but we hope it will. And the plate would simply say, choose life. And it would give a strong pro-life message, choose life, to anyone who would care to plate put that type of a license plate on their vehicle. And by simply offering the words choose life, we've brought on a firestorm of protest. And there are just a handful of senators who are working very, very hard to stop us from making available a choose life license plate. As you know, Nate, there are three levels of debate on every bill. And we were able to get this choose life license plate bill moved from what's called general file, that's the first level of debate, moved on to select file. So it was quite a battle to do it, but we got it done. And now there's two more rounds to go. I think we can get this bill done this year. I'm praying for it, working hard on it. We're talking to a lot of senators. We're finding some strong support, but there still is a pocket of senators who are determined to stop this bill. So we need more prayers and more contacts from the people to their state senators, urging them to vote yes on the Choose Life license plate bill.
Absolutely. That's a bill we should see go through, and we're working hard to make sure we can push it across the finish line. And last question I have for you here is, I think a lot of people, especially after going through this most recent election cycle, have been turned off by politics and wanting to really disengage. Why is it so important that people remain engaged in the political process, and what kind of difference can they make by reaching out and contacting their elected officials and being in the know on these issues and making sure that their voice is being heard?
Well, at last November, obviously, we had the national election. And I think in Nebraska and probably nationwide, about 65% of the people voted. But over the course of a four-year cycle, there are actually eight elections. There are four general elections and four primary elections. We're coming now into city elections this year, 2017. And instead of getting a 65% turnout, we'll probably get about a 65 to 75% no-show. Only a handful of people will participate in the elections from now until the next presidential cycle, 4 years from now. And that's a great tragedy because the state legislative positions and mayors and city council people and so forth, these are all very, very important positions. And it's important to make sure that we get good, rooted people into these positions who will then go on to other offices probably and who can then serve us honorably. So we want to encourage people to engage in the process. You really can make a difference.
Lieutenant Governor Mike Foley, you are an admirable public servant and true champion for Nebraska families. Thank you for being on the show today and the work that you are doing for our state.
Thanks, Nate. Always good to be with you. Take care.
I'll be back next week with more information and everything you need to know about what's going on at the state capitol. Thank you again to sponsors of the show, the Bill Black CBS Home Real Estate Team. For all your real estate needs, call the Bill Black Team at 402-680-2500 and let them put their expertise in real estate to work for you. Call the Bill Black Team at 402-680-2500. And whatever your vehicle needs, visit Walker Tire and Auto Service at one of their four convenient locations in Omaha. Walker Tire and Auto has been serving the Omaha area for over six decades. Visit Walker Tire and Auto and get the Walker Tire Advantage. As always, for more information, you can visit NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org. Thanks for listening to your Capital Connection.